I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Is the President of the United States unfit to serve in that office? More than 64,000 mental health professionals have signed a petition that says Donald Trump manifests a serious mental illness. They've told the cabinet that Mr. Trump should be removed from office. But how could those mental health professionals come to that conclusion without having spoken with Mr. Trump in person? And should they share an opinion about him without his consent to do so? And should the opinion of 64,000 mental health experts overrule the opinion of the 64 million people who voted for him? Dr. John Gartner says that mental health professionals have a duty to warn about the president's behavior and the danger it portends. Dr. Alan Dyer suggests that Mr. Trump is morally impaired, but not in mental distress. They join me on Midday right after the news. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. I'm very glad you've joined us. We're going to talk today about President Donald Trump's mental health. Most people have an opinion about Mr. Trump's fitness for office, and like the election itself last November, those opinions fall along party and racial lines. A poll conducted by Quinnipiac University 2 weeks ago found that overall, by a margin of 56 to 42, Americans find the president not fit to serve. Roughly half of white people think he is fit to serve. 94% of African Americans and 60% of Hispanics think he is not. 94% of Democrats, 57% of independents think he is not fit. 84% of Republicans, according to the Quinnipiac poll, think he is fit to serve. So one's opinion about Mr. Trump's fitness to serve may be rooted in either agreeing or disagreeing with his policy choices. So for the purposes of today's discussion on our program, we will generally ignore his actual policies. What we will consider are two things. Number one, is Mr. Trump mentally stable or is he mentally ill? And if so, does that illness present a danger to the country and to the world? Number two, should mental health professionals, who are the most well-prepared to make a judgment one way or the other about Mr. Trump's mental health, be restrained by the so-called Goldwater Rule? That's an ethical guideline issued by the American Psychiatric Association that instructs psychiatrists not to discuss any person's mental health without having examined him or her or without that person's permission to discuss it. My guests today are a psychologist and a psychiatrist who have different takes on this ethical directive, and I will introduce them to you presently. But first, I want to make clear that if you support the president, if you voted for him, if you are happy with the job he is doing, you, like everyone else listening to this broadcast, are welcome at this table. We absolutely welcome any and all reasoned opinions about the president or any other issue we cover on this show. Our phone number is 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org and our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. We welcome your comments. And now let me introduce my guests. Joining me in the studio is Dr. John Gartner. He's a psychologist and the founder of an organization called Duty to Warn. He taught at the Johns Hopkins Medical School for 28 years, and he practices psychology in Baltimore. He has written two books, and he contributed an essay to a book released last week called The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump, 27 Psychiatrists and Mental Health Experts Assess a President. Dr. Gartner, welcome, sir. It's good to meet you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And joining us on the line from the studios of NPR in Washington, D.C. is Dr. Alan Dyer. He's an MD, and he also holds a PhD in ethics. He's a professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at George Washington University Medical School. He was a member of the American Psychiatric Association's Ethics Committee when the so-called Goldwater Rule was written more than 40 years ago. Dr. Dyer, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So, Dr. Gartner, let me have you sort of summarize the gist of your argument and this organization that you have, Duty to Warn, and the committee that you had within that organization concerning the 25th Amendment and what you are suggesting, and you and your mental health professionals that have signed on to a petition that you have circulated. About 64,000 mental health professionals have signed that petition. What do you think is going on, and what do you think we should do?
Yeah. Thank you. I also want to add that on Saturday, we're having duty to warn teach-ins and town halls all around the United States in 13 different cities, including Washington, D.C., and there's still a few tickets left if you want to sign up for them. Actually, I was very excited today to be talking to Dr. Dyer because he was, for a couple of reasons. One, because he was part of the original Goldwater Committee, and also because some of the things that he said I really agree with. One of the points he's made is that the Goldwater Rule, in quotes, is not a rule, but rather a principle. And what he said is much of the current discussion applies rule-based, legalistic thinking to matters of professional judgment based on principle. You know, it's one thing to talk about the Goldwater Rule in general, but we're talking about it in a specific case, the specific case of the dangerous patient, Donald Trump.
So let's before we talk about the rule itself, and we'll have ample time to talk about that, let's talk about the diagnosis or the evaluation, the impression that Mr. Trump, as an individual case, gives you as a mental health professional.
Right. Well, he is clearly narcissistic. He knows more about ISIS than the generals. He knows about more about everything than everybody. He shows a lack of empathy. He demonstrates paranoid thinking. He feels he's constantly the victim of some kind of conspiracy, and the list of his conspiracy theories, bizarre conspiracy theories, goes on and on. He has a pattern of lying. He has a pattern of violating and exploiting the rights of others and showing no remorse about it. He has a pattern of being sadistic, of taking pleasure in bullying other people. These are characteristics that do go with a diagnosis called malignant narcissism, but they're also behaviors that predict someone's being unstable and destructive. And that's the real bottom line here. This person is unfit, and he is dangerous, and dangerous at the level of millions of people may die. I think millions of people will probably die because of this man.
And Dr. Dyer, this term malignant narcissism occurs frequently in the course of the essays that are included in this book to which Dr. Gartner has contributed. Do you agree with Dr. Gartner's assertion that these various behaviors, which we've all witnessed, you know, on the public in a public forum with the president, do they constitute a mental illness?
So the question is, what is a mental illness? And there's disagreement of opinion in terms of what that is. If we look at the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association, the current edition, the fifth edition, one of the criteria of personality disorders that's important is that the patient experiences distress and manifests impairment. In the fourth edition, distress was one of the criteria. In the fifth edition, it's impairment. Alan Francis, who wrote the criteria for the DSM-IV, suggests that Donald Trump is not mentally ill because he doesn't experience distress. So in a sense, it's a semantic consideration in terms of what we mean and understand by mental illness. He isn't mentally ill in the same sense that we usually refer to mental illness as people who are seeking treatment for the disorder. But there certainly is an impairment in terms of his judgment and his relationship to the world in which he exists.
We're having a little trouble with your line over there from NPR, so we're going to be working on that, Dr. Dyer, and I appreciate your patience. The capacity for a mental health professional to evaluate someone that they've never met. Let's talk about whether or not that's ethical or not in a bit, but is there a capacity? Can you, Dr. Gartner, view somebody's public behavior and assume that that's the way the person is in private, and assume that you are getting a complete picture, a nuanced picture of that person's mental state? Because you've never met Mr. Trump, neither of any of the people who contributed essays to this book. I know plenty of people who are public figures who are very different in public than they are in private. Some of them are better in public than they are in private, and some of them are worse.
Well, actually, if you read the Washington Post, people inside the White House are saying he behaves just as abominably in private, that he's constantly losing his temper and raging at people, that he's impulsive, and that they basically have to treat him like a child, distract him, delay him, so that he doesn't act out in destructive ways that show poor judgment. I would like to point out, though, that I think Dr. Dyer has just conceded this debate because he said that Donald Trump's
a conversation.
because what he said is Donald Trump's judgment is impaired, and that's the two criteria for mental illness are distress and impairment. So by saying that he's manifesting, and I would agree with him, and I think any reasonable person would agree with him, that he is showing impairment in his judgment, he's showing impulsive behavior, he's showing distortions in reality testing, but therefore that does impair him doing the job. You know, I used to work with the employee assistance program at Hopkins. If we had an employee, whether he was a doctor or the CEO or the head of the, who was constantly lying, who was boasting, who was breaking all the rules, who was attacking everyone else in the organization, who was, you know, defaming people on Twitter, and we asked him to please, and being impulsive and thought he knew everything about everything, wouldn't listen to anybody, and we'd asked him to stop, he would be fired. In other words, he's found the one job he can't be fired from other than his own business. Mm-hmm. But he is impaired, and we all do see the impairment.
Okay, and Dr. Dyer, I mean, when you and Dr. Francis talk about moral impairment as distinguished from mental distress, can you explore that a little bit for us?
So I appreciate Dr. Gartner acknowledging the contributions that I've made in terms of clarifying the Goldwater Rule, or the so-called Goldwater Rule. I don't see this as a debate between him and me and those people who are concerned about Trump's behavior and myself or those people who are interested in the APA principles in terms of what professional behavior means in terms of this debate. I do share many of the concerns that he's identified, perhaps all of the concerns. And so I think there's an overlap between the concerns of mental impairment and the concerns of moral behavior. And the question is, what's the role of the mental health professional, be it psychiatrist or psychologist, in terms of making a difference in terms of the peril or dangerousness that we're all experiencing, or many of us feel that we're experiencing in terms of the president's behavior?
Dr. Mark Conrad, who's an acquaintance of Dr. Gartner and is here at Shepherd Pratt and is on the faculty at Hopkins, he's a psychiatrist. He was quoted in the Atlantic magazine by saying, "You don't need a doctor to tell you that the guy who's hacking and coughing on the plane is sick." We have Dr. Bandy Lee, who's the editor of this collection of essays. "It doesn't take a psychiatrist to notice that our president is mentally compromised." Dr. Dyer, shouldn't it take a psychiatrist to notice that our president is mentally compromised? I mean, shouldn't this be left to the professionals?
I don't think it should be left to the professionals. I think it's a question of expertise. An extreme example that occurs to me in this debate is the movie The Ghostbusters, in which the Bill Murray character, everyone is worrying about what to do about the ghosts that people are experiencing. He says, "Back off, I'm a scientist." And I think the danger that we would get in if we say, we, because of our expertise, know things that other people don't notice, or we have an understanding of this that other people don't notice. We have contributions to make based on that understanding, but I think the argument is that if the mental health professionals call this into question, that would in some way arrest the concerns that people have, or arrest the behavior that is so aberrant. And I think that's not sufficient.
Let me remind folks that the so-called Goldwater Rule is not a rule. It is part of the Principles of Medical Ethics published by the American Psychiatric Association quite some time ago. And this followed a magazine called Fact Magazine in 1964. They had an article in which 1,189 psychiatrists say that Goldwater is psychologically unfit to be president. So they're basically saying what you're saying, Dr. Gartner, about Mr. Trump. And Barry Goldwater sued them and said, "You really can't say that. You've never met me. You don't know me. You haven't examined me." And there was a lawsuit, and Goldwater won. Dr. Gartner, the courts have weighed in on this, I mean, at least 40 years ago. How is it... are you making the same diagnosis of Donald Trump that you would make of one of your patients that you see here at Shepherd Pratt?
Yes, actually, absolutely. And I want to answer your question, but also respond to what Dr. Dyer said and this issue of, do we have something to contribute to the conversation? I certainly don't think we have everything to contribute, but we do have something to contribute. As Bandy Lee says in the introduction to the book, this was the most bizarre experience I've had as a psychiatrist, where the people who know the most about a topic are forbidden from speaking about it. I've been studying, I learned about malignant narcissism from the most famous person in the world in that area, Otto Kernberg. I taught that specific area at Johns Hopkins for 30 years. So I do know a thing or two, like farmers. I've seen a thing or two, so I know a thing or two. Our contribution to the conversation is important for two reasons. First of all, before the election, I was warning that Donald Trump was not going to pivot and become more presidential, because the nature of malignant narcissism is that when malignant narcissists gain power, they become 10 times worse. They become more grandiose, drunk with power, more paranoid, and more vindictive and violent towards their opponents. And that's what's happened. So it would have been helpful if before they voted, the American people could have had the benefit of that information. So we sacrificed the welfare of the public by being silent and refusing to educate them about what we already know. And we're still damaging the public, because with this bizarre logic that you can only diagnose him if you interview him, and he won't consent to an interview, and therefore it can never be known. The truth can never be known. Quién sabe? It's like the existence of God. We'll never know. It's a mystery.
So we'll talk about that as regards the 25th Amendment, which is a part of the Constitution that does appear to allow for some intervention in situations perhaps like this. We're going to take a break first, but we will be back. Dr. Alan Dyer is a psychiatrist on the faculty of the George Washington University School of Medicine. He's a distinguished life fellow of the American Psychiatric Association. He joins us from Washington. Dr. John Gartner is here with me in Studio A. He's a psychologist who taught at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine for many years. He's the founder of Duty to Warn, an organization of mental health professionals seeking to have President Donald Trump removed from office under the 25th Amendment. He is one of the experts who has contributed an essay to a book that's out just last week. It's called The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump, 27 Psychiatrists and Mental Health Experts Assess a President. You are welcome to join our conversation when we come back. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. We're talking today about a very serious and delicate topic. One of my guests, an experienced psychologist named John Gartner, is arguing that the President of the United States should be removed from office, as is allowed in the Constitution under the 25th Amendment, because he is psychologically unfit. Dr. John Gartner and others have published a book called The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump, 27 Psychiatrists and Mental Health Experts Assess a President. We hope to be joined again soon by Dr. Alan Dyer. He's a psychiatrist on the faculty of the George Washington University School of Medicine. He was on the Ethics Committee of the American Psychiatric Association when it crafted its so-called Goldwater Rule, which in this case would restrain psychiatrists from diagnosing the president because they have not personally evaluated him, nor do they have his permission to discuss his case publicly. We are having a little trouble with the line from NPR. We are working on it and hope to have Dr. Dyer back with us soon. You are welcome to join our conversation. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. So, Dr. Gartner, you are advocating that the president be removed under the 25th Amendment. Section 4 of that amendment states in part that whenever the vice president and a majority of either the principal officers of the executive departments or such other body as Congress by law may provide, so it's a little ambiguous as to who the deciding group is, one of those two groups, when they decide that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, that the vice president shall immediately assume the presidency. Jamie Raskin, a congressional representative in the 8th District here in Maryland, has introduced a bill. And the bill basically requires Mr. Trump to undergo an evaluation and have a nonpartisan committee decide what to do, if anything, after that evaluation. So a couple of things come to mind. The first is, how effective would an evaluation of any patient be if that patient were unwilling and uncooperative and not invested in the process?
Well, that's an excellent question, and it actually speaks to this issue of why a personal interview isn't the be-all and end-all in terms of making a diagnosis of Donald Trump. Because when you do a psychiatric interview with someone with a severe personality disorder, they'll tell you there's nothing wrong with them. All these people who are complaining are idiots, they don't see themselves as having a problem. It's actually part of their pathology. They don't see themselves as having a problem. So someone like Donald Trump would never seek treatment and never be able to get better. He's actually untreatable. But we need some kind of objective evaluation. As you pointed out, I haven't interviewed the president, and people might think that I'm partisan. I don't agree. But the purpose of H.R. 1987 is to introduce a body of doctors who are nonpartisan, who could do an objective medical evaluation. And so we are actually honoring Jamie Raskin at our Duty to Warn meeting in Washington, D.C. We're giving him an award and a check. And we are thanking him for doing this because he is someone who is actually doing something.
So he's proposed this bill, and he's not proposing that he be removed. He's proposing that he be evaluated.
Right.
So Dr. Comrade, who was very helpful in helping me prepare for our conversation today, this is Mark Comrade up at Shepherd Pratt, asked a few interesting questions. One is, he says, who would articulate the specific criteria used in the evaluation? I mean, and isn't it possible that and this happens all the time, I would imagine, in cases in which a defendant in a criminal trial argues for insanity as a defense. You can find one mental health professional who will say, yes, this person is insane, and another who will evaluate that same individual and say, no, this person is not.
Look, we're definitely in uncharted territory here. I mean, this has never been done before. And what Jamie Raskin is trying to do is to come up with some objective, operationalized procedure so that we can cope with this situation. Look, this is, let's be honest, the ultimate nightmare. A madman has his hands on the nuclear codes, and he's threatening to wipe another country off the face of the earth. You know, if somebody walked into this studio waving a gun threatening to kill us, we'd have him arrested and evaluated. He's threatening to kill millions of people. So I think an evaluation is long overdue. It probably would be difficult to maybe talk about the specifics of how that would be done, but the necessity that it be done is obvious, and that's why we're honoring Jamie Raskin. And by the way, there's 31 co-sponsors to H.R. 1987, and we have formed a political action committee, and we are going to raise money, and we are going to support those candidates.
And right now, all 31 are Democrats. There's nobody in the Republican side who's part of this. And as you heard, and as you know, I mean, this Quinnipiac poll that came out just a couple of weeks ago, a vast majority of Republicans still very much support the president. They voted for him knowing an awful lot of this information. They've seen a lot of that behavior. This behavior was not unknown to anybody prior to the 8th of November last year. So, you know, a lot of folks would say they voted for him because they wanted just this kind of presidency. They wanted this kind of disruption. They wanted to upend the traditional norms of government. They are welcoming this behavior.
Well, I think that a lot of people also have been very shocked at how unpresidential he has been. I think most people had a more optimistic view that he was going to, quote, that famous pivot, that he was going to pivot and become more presidential.
I remember that. Yeah.
Remember the pivot?
I do.
Okay. Well, no pivot. In fact, he's deteriorated. And I make a prediction here on the air. He's going to deteriorate even worse. We haven't seen the worst. We haven't hit the bottom with Donald Trump yet.
And that's a scientific prediction. That is premised in your experience with other patients, that they don't get better, they get worse.
Right.
Is there any particular reason that they get worse? I mean, why is there an equal possibility that he will improve, that he will have he will take the good counsel of General McMaster and General Kelly and General Mattis and Secretary Tillerson and people who are pointed to those kinds of people as you know, the clear heads in the room.
I'll bet my retirement account that that's not going to happen. And people don't like when I use this example, but another malignant narcissist, the one who spawned the diagnosis, is Hitler. And everyone thought, oh, Hitler wouldn't be so bad. I mean, they could control him, or he was kind of a clown. And in fact, he, of course, was a monster and became more monstrous as time went on. Because of their paranoia, they become more and more paranoid because they encounter opposition. So they become more paranoid. They become more grandiose because they have power. And they become more vindictive and reckless in their revenge. And that could end millions of deaths.
I'm happy to say we have Dr. Dyer back. Dr. Dyer, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Glad to have you back, and sorry for the problem. A gentleman named James Gilligan wrote in as one of these essays in this book that Dr. Gartner contributed to. He said the issue really isn't mental illness, it's dangerousness. And this is what Dr. Gartner was just talking about, that.
Right.
Mr. Gilligan makes the point that most violence is committed by people who are not mentally ill. That mental illness doesn't really matter one way or the other. What do you make of that?
Yes, I think that's an important point. I think this is the reason mental illness is an important consideration. Malignant narcissism is an important consideration, The issues are moral and political in terms of 25th Amendment as a possibility, or where does the power come from, or how does a dictator rise or a tyrant rise to power? These are important considerations. So to go back to the early discussion about the Goldwater Rule, or actually the principle of the caveat, which is taken by some people as, and many of my colleagues in the American Psychiatric Association, as a gag order that psychiatrists should say nothing, I think it's a conflict of principle, duty to warn being another principle, if that would be useful. Fitness for duty evaluation is something that psychiatrists might well have something to contribute to. Malignant narcissism, which hasn't been extensively studied because its application has been for only those few rare individuals who rise to such positions of power and prominence that they do become dangerous to the social order and dangerous to the world order. That's something which psychiatrists and psychologists as behavioral scientists could well make a contribution to. In terms of the importance of a personal evaluation as we envisioned it in 1974 when the Goldwater caveat was written, in the age of Twitter, in the age of social media, in the age of 24-hour news cycles, we have a great deal of information about the president, about the way his mind works. There are things that would be useful to know, collateral information, developmental history, but certainly we know a great deal about him, and what we know is very concerning indeed.
John sends us an email from Centerville. He says, you only need to be a psychiatrist in order to prescribe a treatment. The relevant issue here is duty to warn. So certainly making the case is important to have in the public discourse. Let me go to the phones, and we've got a whole bunch of folks who'd like to be part of this. Elena in Reisterstown, welcome to Midday with Drs. Dyer and
Hi, Gardner. Thank you. I have two questions about victimization, actually. The first question is, what are the signs of victimization from dealing with somebody who would be considered a narcissist or diagnosed? And if we are actually dealing with somebody who has malignant narcissism, what kind of victimization can happen to us as a population on a micro level? Like, can we individually start to experience signs of being a victim of his narcissism? Or is it a macro aspect that we're dealing with of violence towards another country and abuse on that level?
And Dr. Gartner, there's a whole point, there's a whole part of the book here that talks about the effects on the body politic, the anxiety that is that was created the day Mr. Trump actually won the election, much to most people's surprise.
Yeah, I think that there really is a kind of public health crisis going on, that so many people are experiencing anxiety and distress, physical symptoms, because the sense of being on the brink of destruction is... In every news cycle, he does something more and more outrageous, so we never get a chance to get a rest. And in a way, it's almost like we're all abused spouses now. We have 300 million abused spouses who are kind of on this ride with this malignant narcissist who's never at fault, who attacks us, who attacks our sense of reality, and constantly threatens our safety and well-being. It is very much like being an abused spouse. And one of the writers in the book, actually several of them, who specialize in those areas, talk about those parallels. One writer in particular, Amy Tang, I thought was very poignant. What she does for a living is work with people who've been victimized or traumatized by torture, by sexual abuse. And she talked about how after the election, her patients just completely decompensated, and how one was going to report her abuser. And she said, I'm not going to do it. We've elected a rapist to the White House. Nobody cares about my story. The swastikas that people have seen all around the country, the hot rise in hate crimes. So we are all being battered by this, and my sympathy to the caller, I'm with you. We're all experiencing this together.
And Dr. Dyer, your colleague Dr. Francis has said, look, he literally wrote the book, the DSM, the diagnostic manual, and he says, people have been talking about this narcissistic personality disorder, but he doesn't meet the criteria. And what a lot of folks have said is there's a difference between bad and mad. That's even in the title of Dr. Gartner's essay here. So what is the difference between bad and evil and mentally ill?
So actually, I think it isn't so much an either or, it's an overlap. And Dr. Francis' new book is called The Twilight of American Sanity. And he's analyzing what is it that has enabled this to happen. It's not an isolated instance. It isn't that Trump is one-off. There are other instances in the world of isolationist policies and more fear and more nationalism and rise in that sort of thing. And so if we look at, bear down on the question of narcissism and malignant narcissism and say, what are those things developmentally? How did this phenomenon occur? One of the things we see is the mirroring and the idealization. So out of fear, perhaps out of suppressed hatred, then we see somebody who mirrors perhaps the worst in ourselves and the hope that maybe he will make America great again. And then we see the unraveling of this as the what inevitably follows the idealization is the devaluation. And that's, I think, the process that we're in right now. So then it becomes not just a mental health issue, but a political issue. Does the 25th Amendment come into play? How does it come into play? Is impeachment a consideration? Were the crimes committed that we will learn more about in terms of collusion with the Russians? What are the mechanisms by which this can be reined in? How will the checks and balances work? Will they work?
Yeah. Of course, collusion with the Russians, and we'll see what happens with Special Counsel Mueller's investigation. But that's a very different thing than a diagnosis of mental illness. But as you say, Dr. Dyer, you cannot extract politics from this equation. David writes in from Rock Hall, says, Tom, while I appreciate your guest's credentials, it's hard not to conclude that they and their supporters sadly conflate Trump's glaring character flaws and moral indifference with mental illness. Many Trump supporters, of which I'm definitely not one, and non-Trump supporting conservatives cannot but conclude that this is nothing but a partisan crusade to discredit their vote. So, Dr. Gartner, you had 64,000 people sign the petition. 64 million people voted for Mr. Trump.
Well, I sometimes jokingly say I'm the chairman of the Pence 2017 Presidential Committee, because if we remove Trump, we'll have President Pence. I couldn't disagree more with President or Vice President Pence's policies, but I would rest easy and sleep like a baby with a President Pence because he's just conservative. He's not crazy and dangerous. So it's not about politics. It's about mental illness, being unfit for office, and being a danger.
We're going to take another break. We have a bunch of folks lined up on the phones. I will do my best to get to as many of them as we can. Dr. Alan Dyer joins us from Washington. He's a psychiatrist on the faculty of the George Washington University School of Medicine. Dr. John Gartner is here with me in the studio. He's a psychologist and the founder of Duty to Warn. It's a group of mental health professionals advocating for President Trump's removal from office under the 25th Amendment. The book we're talking about is called The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump. 27 psychiatrists and mental health experts assess a president. When we come back, 410-662-8780. That's our number. Our email, midday@wypr.org. To find us on Twitter, @MiddayTomHall. Stay with us. And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you're just joining us, we're talking today about mental health professionals and their duty to warn in the case of President Donald Trump, whose behavior during the campaign and since taking office has alarmed and frightened many people in the mental health profession and well beyond. One of my guests this afternoon, a psychologist named Dr. John Gartner, has written that President Trump is, quote, a profoundly evil man exhibiting malignant narcissism. Well, that term, malignant narcissism, comes up quite a bit in the new book to which Dr. Gartner has contributed. It's called The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump, 27 Psychiatrists and Mental Health Experts Assess a President. Dr. Alan Dyer joins us as well from the studios of NPR in Washington, although at the moment I think he's on a telephone instead of actually in the studio. He's a psychiatrist and a PhD in ethics, and he's the author of several books. He serves on the faculty of the George Washington University School of Medicine. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Let me get to a couple of emails here. Dan writes, having had a narcissistic parent, I could have predicted Trump's behavior. My question is this. Isn't it time that people in the mental health field started running for office? We need psychiatrists and psychologists at every level of government. So, Dr. Dyer, Dr. Gartner, you want to make an announcement today?
Well, I can announce this. I am entering politics by starting a political action committee. A lot of people have said to me, well, it's great that you're speaking out, but what are you going to do about it? And I have the same question.
So you're collecting money from people and hoping to influence the political process in the same old way that everybody else does.
Absolutely. And I think we're going to influence it in a couple of ways. One is I want to influence Democrats, and it probably is going to be just Democrats, but I would welcome any Republicans to run on the removal of the president as one of their core issues. Actually, there's an article in the New York Times today. Somebody, one of the big key Democratic donors, Steyer, saying that. Eugene Robinson said it in the Post yesterday. Democrats have a tendency to be a little low T, in my opinion, you know, to be a little low testosterone. They're timid and they're intellectual. And we need to be bold here, and we need to be honest, and we need to be direct, and we need to say the truth and speak it openly, that this is an unqualified president, he's a threat to our country, and it should be a core principle in the campaign of 2018. The campaign of 2018 is about removing an unfit president.
Michelle writes in, anyone requiring an upper level clearance must meet certain conditions. These should be conditions that should also be met by the commander in chief. They include releasing your tax records and a psychological assessment. Dr. Dyer, what do you think about that? It's true that people who surround Mr. Trump with the nuclear football and that equipment are subject to very, very close scrutiny about their mental capacity and their mental health. Is this something that should be required as a matter of public policy and law from all people in the government? Because at the moment, the Constitution does not require that the president be subject to the same kind of scrutiny that others in his circle are.
And we rest on the Constitution in terms of how those judgments are made. But I think it does make a lot of sense in terms of what is fitness for duty and how is that understood and how is that defined. So I think that's a very, very sound idea.
Morgan in Street, thanks for your call to Midday.
Hey, Mr. Hall, thank you so much for taking my call. Basically, what I was going to say is his narcissism is the fuel for his ego. Trump's ego is what runs everything. And the only reason his ego is this high is because he did what everyone thought was impossible. As much as I didn't want him to get elected as president, he did what everyone in the nation or a good majority of us thought was impossible. That fed his ego, which feeds his narcissism, which feeds the potential for the unknown. The unknown is what's scary here. It's not necessarily going to be bad. It's not necessarily going to be good, but something needs to be done to counteract it.
All right. Dr. Dyer, one of your colleagues at Columbia University, he's the chair of psychiatry there, Dr. Jeffrey Lieberman, points out that Mr. Trump came from a stable, intact family. He had an upbringing that was not traumatic. He had normal development. He went to school. He passed his courses. He graduated from college. Dr. Lieberman even suggested he's dedicated to his family. I mean, the three marriages notwithstanding. But, is there anything in Trump's background? There's a whole chapter in this book about Trump and his daddy issues. I mean, is there anything in the background of Mr. Trump that, as you understand it, that would lead one to think that this diagnosis of malignant narcissism was at least a possibility?
a lot I think we don't know about Trump's childhood, and I think that description doesn't encompass all of the things that might be of concern, why he was sent off to military school, why he was considered to be unmanageable by his own parents, and some of the sadistic characteristics that were manifested early in childhood. In terms of the political issues, I think we need to look at the ways in which our political system has become polarized in a binary kind of way, that there are a whole host of policy issues that people identify with in terms of one party or the other. And what I think it would be useful if we could get a discussion beyond those issues in terms of what would be a sensible immigration policy, what would be a sensible fiscal policy, what would be a sensible foreign policy, in terms of what are our common interests as citizens, as a nation, and in terms of the oppositions in the global order.
Christina in Towson, welcome to Midday with Dr. Alan Dyer and Dr. John Gartner.
Hi. Hello.
Yes, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to note maybe there's some of the differences between media and information now versus when the Goldwater Rule was decided upon. With the ubiquity of media, social media, and Trump's propensity to like use it constantly, we're able to view a bunch more behaviors, some of his decision-making, some of his private thoughts, if in fact some of that is what's going on Twitter. And I feel like that's a very different environment, what we're able to glean from that now than we might have been able to get many years ago.
Thanks for that call. You're getting a heavy amen from Dr. Gartner here. Dr. Dyer, you were on the committee that came up with these ethical guidelines. Is the situation because of social media, et cetera, just dramatically different? And does it call then for a different set of guidelines?
So that's one of the questions that we're debating in the APA. Do we need to modify the guidelines? And if they were rules, we would certainly say that the rules aren't addressing what they need to address. As principles, we can say there's a conflict between the principles of confidentiality, the principles of duty to warn, the principles of integrity, honesty, other principles that one beneficence that one might wish to identify with as a professional, and then figure out how they apply in the particular situation. Another of the differences between now and 1974 is that we have a different approach to diagnosis than we had at that time. So the statements about importance of actually interviewing the patient have become different in terms of since DSM-3, which came out, I believe, in 1980-something, which is a specific list of criteria. You can check them. They're there. They're not there, like the light switch is on, the light switch is off. Prior to DSM-3, it was a more integrative approach, assessing not only the history, the developmental history, the collateral information, but also the emotional awareness of one's own response to the person that was being interviewed. Those things are not so much the way that we make diagnoses today, although the history is still relevant, and times have changed indeed, and the ubiquity of social media gives us a very different perspective on the issues, and I think we would write the principles differently now, the caveat differently, the annotations now than we did in 1974.
Dr. Gartner?
Yeah, I'd like to just second that, and I want to thank Dr. Dyer for making both of those points, both the one about how through social media we have more information, but also something that a lot of people who aren't in our field don't appreciate, that of course Dr. Dyer does because he was there, is at the time that this article came out, and it was actually malpractice by the journalist. He didn't talk about any of the psychiatrists who said positive things about Goldwater. But at that time, we didn't have the DSM. So they were making comments like he had been scarred by his potty training or he was a latent homosexual, these very psychoanalytic kind of abstract constructs. Our shared colleague, Bob Spitzer, who wrote the DSM-3, who got the process started, had one goal in mind.
And again, that's the physician's manual that they refer to when it comes to guidelines for diagnosis.
Exactly. He had one thing in mind, to replace the diagnostic system with criteria that were observable behaviors, things where 100 people could see the same patient and come to the same conclusion.
Let me ask you, if I might, to interrupt, I'm just running out of time, so I want to make sure we get as much in as possible. Let's take one of the observable behaviors, and that is Mr. Trump's deep commitment to lying.
Thank you.
He has been called a liar by all sorts of people in the media. I'm not the first person. The Washington Post just a couple days ago came up with a list of some 1,600 misstatements. You know,
I think it was 4,000.
Well, whatever the number is, it's a high number.
Incalculable.
Bandy Lee in her comment says, well, there's one thing if he's lying and doesn't realize he's lying, or he's lying and he does realize that he's making things up. He's just fabricating things. So maybe he's fabricating things, knowing full well that he is, because he's a shyster. He's a huckster. He's simply a snake oil salesperson. But that doesn't make him crazy, does it? It just makes him a liar.
Well, it could make him a psychopath, which is a diagnosis, or antisocial personality disorder, which is one of the personality disorders. And so his lying is very relevant for diagnosis there. But to answer your deeper question, my colleague Lance Dota says, Trump tells two kinds of lies, the lies he tells others to deceive them and the lies he tells himself to bend reality to his fantasies and needs. So sometimes it's not always easy to tell which is which.
How do you know he's telling lies to himself? Well, how does one figure that out?
Because some of the lies don't even help his cause. It's one thing to lie to gin up your base. It's another thing to say on the day that you were elected, you had the biggest crowd size in history, which isn't going to gin up anybody.
But then I'm no doctor, sir. You are. But you're basically saying that there's a crazy person who's acting rationally.
Look, it is a mystery, because in that regard, you would need to be inside of his head. And that's why in the chapter I address this as kind of, in a way, the $64,000 question. But so much of what he says sounds like grandiose and paranoid delusions. It's hard to believe it's all an act.
I want to try to get one real quick comment in. Mike, you've been very patient on the phone. Give us a quick question for our guests out here on Midday.
Hi, Tom and doctors. He seems to have no core, and I was curious how some of the concerns that you have about his psychology plays into that. You know, he flip-flops constantly. He used to be pro-choice, now he's pro-life, pro-gun control, now he's a darling of the NRA.
Yeah, that's a good point. Dr. Dyer, I mean, does that indicate any sort of mental instability or simply a flexibility to change one's mind?
So all of the above, and I think this would be one of the examples of the kind of thing in which you have a mirroring going on between those people who believe fervently in certain issues like gun control or the unwillingness to look at sensible gun controls, when the real question that we need to be having in terms of public debate is what kind of gun controls do we need to have? What are sensible policies? And the inflexibility there goes to the question of is he mirroring what he wants to hear? Is going back to the question of crowd size and his obsession with size and the need to believe is it craziness or is it craziness like a fox?
But Dr. Dyer, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. We've run out of time, but I very much appreciate both you and Dr. Gartner giving us your time and your expertise this afternoon. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Dr. Ellen Dyer is with the George Washington University School of Medicine. Dr. John Gartner is the founder of Duty to Warn. That's an organization of mental health professionals that are advocating for Congress to use its powers under the 25th Amendment to remove President Trump from office. There are Duty to Warn events taking place across the country on Saturday. The closest one to most of our listeners will be held at 11 o'clock at the Kimpton Glover Park Hotel in Washington. Come to WIPR.org/midday and we'll have more information. The book that Dr. Gartner and 26 other mental health professionals published last week is called The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump. It's edited by Dr. Bandy Lee. She's a psychiatrist at Yale who organized the Duty to Warn conference at Yale last April. That'll do it for us today. Thanks to the Baltimore Chef Shop on the Avenue in Hamden for providing lunch. They offer a variety of private events and cooking classes for kids and adults, including baking and international cuisines. Tomorrow evening at 6:30, they're offering a regional French cuisines class. We've got more on the web at baltimorechefshop.com. Coming up tomorrow on Midday, another installment of our series on religion, Living Questions. My guest will be Asma Uddin. She's the co-founder and director of strategy for the Center for Islam and Religious Freedom, and Serene Jones, the president of Union Theological Seminary. We're going to talk about religious freedom and what that term even means in the present domestic and geopolitical environment. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick will review the new show at Single Carrot Theater. Before we go, thanks to everybody who turned out yesterday at the Baltimore Museum of Industry. We really really enjoyed broadcasting Midday from the BMI, and we look forward to more events in which we get out in communities across the state to explore the issues that are on the minds of Marylanders. I'm Tom Hall. On behalf of our entire Midday team, thanks so much for listening. Have a great day.